If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello there, welcome to another episode of This Week in History with me, Dan. We are moving on to episode 5 of Henry VIII's Wives, and I do want to do a quick little shout out first before we start. I have had another donation on the GoFundMe. Thank you very, very much. We've said it in the last couple of episodes. It is to help improve the podcast equipment and things like that, so it is hugely appreciated, and thank you very much. I will be answering an email at the end of the episode. For those of you of a sensitive disposition, don't listen, because it does regard your current president. That is one of the questions on the email. I know some people have their own opinion on this, and yeah, if you don't want to listen or you don't want to hear my opinion, then please switch off at the end of the episode. So moving on to this week's episode, we are talking about Henry VIII's fifth wife, Catherine Howard. Now, Catherine Howard was probably, and I say probably, just a teenager when she was chosen to be queen. Henry VIII was at least, or more than, 30 years her senior. Just want to, before I shout out here, you might notice my voice is a little bit gravelly, a little bit different. I have been suffering for the last couple of weeks with a chest infection and a cold. And as all of you male listeners know, man flu is extremely bad. And that is why you haven't had an episode, because I haven't really been able to talk properly. Back to the story. Now, the reason we say Catherine was probably a teenager is because we don't actually know exactly when she was born. There are a few surviving records of Catherine Howard's early life, and they suggest that she was born between 1518 and 1524, and we as historians believe it is probably nearer to the 1524, which would make her a little bit younger than what was first thought. For those of you who know about Catherine Howard, you know, as the fifth wife, she was executed by King Henry. Even though he actually spoke about her, he called her his rose without a thorn. But that didn't actually, well, he didn't help her from the axeman. The Howard family tree. So Catherine Howard was a member of the powerful Howard family. She was part of a junior branch, which wasn't obviously the main Howard bloodline, but it was still important. Her father, Edmund Howard, was the younger son of Thomas Howard, the second Duke of Norfolk. Now, Thomas Howard had served four monarchs, and this made Catherine the niece of the Duke of Norfolk, who was one of the most powerful noblemen in England. Her mother, Joyce Lee, was daughter of Sir Richard Culpeper of Aylesford, Kent, and Catherine had numerous siblings and half-siblings. Her mother, Joyce, may have had five children from her first marriage and about the same number from her second marriage, so she was quite a fertile woman. Catherine was actually first cousin of Anne Boleyn, Henry VIII's second wife, and her father was the brother of Anne's mother. She was also second cousin to his third wife, Jane Seymour, and her grandmother, Elizabeth Tilney, was the sister of Jane's grandmother, Anne Say. Now, we do kind of keep it in the family when it comes to the royals, so it's not surprising that these were all related. Now, Catherine is spelt with a C. Catherine's name is sometimes spelt with a C, but most people do spell it with a C rather than a K, like the previous Catherine. And it was not unusual for a person to write their own name in different ways. I tend to use the C for Catherine Howard, because Catherine Parr was spelt with a K, so it just, you can differentiate between the two. But in reality, there's no real right or wrong. Now, Catherine's mother died when she was young, and Catherine was brought up by her father's stepmother, Agnes Tilney, Dowager Duchess of the Norfolk at Chesworth House near Horsham in Sussex, and Norfolk House in Lambeth in London. Agnes superintended Catherine's education, which was a typical of most young women from noble households, included reading, writing, music. Catherine was raised Catholic, but not particularly very pious, so it was just like part of the general life rather than the all importance of religion. Now, Catherine may have been as young as 12 when her music teacher, Henry Mannox, took sexual advantage of his position. Although he stopped short of intercourse when the Dowager Duchess found the couple embracing, she struck Catherine, even though she herself had been at fault for falling to guard Catherine. And it was basically, it was her fault. The customs dictate that because she failed to guard Catherine's honour, it was kind of her fault rather than Catherine's fault or Henry's fault, which is mental because it was clearly Henry's fault. When Catherine was around 14 years old, by which time the household had moved to Lambeth in London, she became sexually involved with her kinsman, Francis Dereham, who had recently been appointed secretary to the Dowager Duchess. This time, there was no doubt that it had been full sexual liaison. They even addressed each other as husband and wife. According to their later testimony of one of Catherine's roommates, there was much panting and puffing in the communal bedchamber, and they were forever hanging together by the belly like sparrows. Catherine herself later admitted that she knew how to meddle with a man without conceiving a child. Basically, she was pretty well experienced at the age of 14, which is quite shocking. Judging from the male attention she received, it's pretty well thought that Catherine was attractive. Although a French ambassador described her as short and graceful rather than beautiful. She had an appealing personality, she loved music and dancing, and she seemed to have been popular with the household members of the Dowager Duchess's household. No confirmed portraits of Catherine survive. A portrait miniature by the celebrated court painter Hans Holbein, who has been mentioned quite a few times, is thought to depict Catherine because it was dated around 1540, which was the year of her marriage to Henry VIII. And the necklace closely resembles that's seen in the portraits of other wives. So there's one portrait, we don't know if it's her, we're making the assumption that it's her because of the evidence. Three other portraits have been linked to Catherine: Holbein's painting of a woman dressed in black, and a portrait of a young woman by a member of Holbein's workshop, and a portrait of a young lady by Lucas Hornbout, However, the debate still continues if any of these are actually Catherine Howard, because, yeah, there's no proof. In March 1539, Catherine's uncle, the Duke of Norfolk, secured her prized position in the household of Anne of Cleves, who was to become Henry's fourth wife. Catherine may have met Henry VIII in December 1539 when he travelled to Greenwich to await Anne's arrival. Then, after the king's disastrous first meeting with Anne, Norfolk likely chose his moment to push Catherine into Henry's path. By June 1540, Henry's interest in Catherine was known throughout the court. One observer noted that the king crept too near another lady, and Anne of Cleves herself complained that her new husband was attracted to Catherine. For the aging Henry, his new love interest held out for the prospect of recapturing his lost youth, and on July the 12th, 1540, Henry secured an annulment of his marriage to Anne. Henry married Catherine at Oatlands Palace in Surrey on the 28th of July 1540, the same day that his once powerful minister Thomas Cromwell was executed. On the 8th of August, Catherine was formally acknowledged as the Queen at Hampton Court Palace. Catherine adopted the motto, Non atur volonte que la sien, meaning no other will but his. Sadly, this was to prove fitting, given the little free will Catherine had as Henry's wife. While he had apparently found Anne of Cleves repellent, he made his attraction to Catherine a little bit too obvious. The king was so amorous of her that he cannot treat her enough and caresses her more than he did the others. And this was written by a French ambassador. Catherine spent little time with her stepchildren, Mary, Elizabeth and Edward, and her relationship with Mary was quite strained. Mary was older than her stepmother and disrespectful, although the relationship improved after Catherine dismissed two of Mary's maids as a punishment. Her relationship with Elizabeth was a little bit more harmonious, and the pair were related through Anne Boleyn anyway. Catherine gifted jewels to the young girl, and Catherine won favour with Prince Edward, but no real relationship was known between the two. By the time he married Catherine, Henry was suffering from ill health, and it was rumoured impotence as well. So there was little prospect of any children. Court gossip claimed that the Queen was pregnant in 1541, but either lost the child or, more likely, was never pregnant in the first place. Catherine appeared a gracious, conventional queen at her first court at Christmas, and she greeted her predecessor Anne of Cleves very warmly. They exchanged gifts, and they even danced together. At Greenwich in 1541, following the conversation of the royal consorts, Catherine successfully pleaded with her husband to pardon some prisoners. She later interceded on behalf of other prisoners and prompted the interests of her family. But in one fundamental respect, Catherine flouted the behaviour expected of a Tudor queen and wife. The fact that she was far from the virginal bride that Henry expected soon became all too obvious. A few months after becoming queen, Catherine was met with her former lover Francis Dereham, who arrived in the court and began pestering her for office, boasting to her counsellors that she favoured him and not the king. At the same time of Dereham's reappearance, Catherine began to receive requests for favours from Thomas Culpeper, a gentleman in the king's privy chamber. Culpeper was distantly related to Catherine on her mother's side, and he described her as a beautiful youth. He was a sexual predator, and there is evidence that he had previously been accused of rape and murder, but escaped punishment thanks to his favour with the king. Shortly before Henry's 50th birthday on the 28th of June 1541, Catherine and Culpepper began an adulterous affair.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
When the young queen accompanied the king on his summer progress, Culpepper went with them. According to later testimonies, Catherine and Culpepper conducted illicit meetings while the court travelled. During the same summer, Catherine wrote a letter to Culpepper that would seal her doom. In it, she affirmed, "It makes my heart die to think I cannot be always in your company." And she signed the letter, "Yours, as long as life endures." Catherine's letter to Thomas Culpepper has often been taken at face value, and it certainly was at the time, but more recent interpretations suggest that it's an emotional tone, and it was fueled less by sexual desire, but by the desperation of a young woman who was seeking to placate an aggressive and dangerous suitor. Given his character, it is possible that Culpepper had established a threatening control over his young queen. Over the young queen. It wasn't his queen, it was Henry's queen. And that she was trying to appease him, rather than being a willful adulteress. Catherine may have had little agency in her relationship with Culpepper, as with other men in her life, and that includes Henry VIII. To make matters worse, it was during the same time that Catherine gave in to Dereham's demands and appointed him her secretary. In October 1541, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Thomas Cranmer, was informed of Catherine's premarital liaisons by a former member of the household and her child at her childhood home. Cranmer was given the unviable task of breaking this news to Henry and left a written summary for the king in the chapel at Hampton Court rather than telling him to his face, which is probably a safe bet. You're better off writing to Henry than actually meeting him face to face. Henry's first reaction to the accusations was disbelief. He ordered an immediate inquiry, which soon proved out there was truth to the allegations. Jane Boleyn, Lady Rochford, a close attendant of the Queen, was interrogated and eventually confessed to her having meetings with Thomas Culpepper. On the 8th of November, the Queen herself confessed. She said that Francis Dereham had used her in such sort as a man doth use his wife in many a sundry times. Catherine also admitted to having sexual encounters with Henry Mannox, and later confessed to an affair with Thomas Culpepper. She wasn't very clever, really. In reporting her testimony to the king, Cranmer remarked that he had found her in lamentation and heaviness, as I never saw no creature. In other words, she was not bothered that she was telling him. She just told the king. Confronted with the truth of Catherine's past, Henry plunged into a deep depression from which he never fully recovered. He had actually adored his young wife and had no notion of her infidelity. On the 14th of November, 1541, Catherine was moved to the former monastery of Sion and 8 days later was deprived of her queenship. Thomas Culpeper and Francis Dereham were convicted of treason on the 1st of December and executed shortly afterwards. Catherine and Lady Rochford were condemned under a bill of attainder on the 21st of January 1542. It stipulated that any future queen who failed to disclose her unchaste would be guilty of treason. On the 10th of February 1542, Catherine was taken by barge to the Tower of London. As she passed under London Bridge, she would have likely have seen the rotting heads of Thomas Culpeper and Francis Dereham. 3 days later, at 9 a.m. on the 13th of February 1542, Catherine faced her execution at the Tower. So weak that she had to be supported onto the scaffold, she gathered enough strength to confess that her sentence was justified. And moments later, the axe fell. Catherine may have been as young as 18 when she died. And on the same day as her execution, without a funeral, Catherine's remains were buried in the Chapel of St. Peter at the Tower of London, along with those of her disgraced cousin, Anne Boleyn, Catherine's attendants, Lady Rochford, who was beheaded shortly after her mistress, was also buried there. Now, this I find very interesting because on the 16th of August, me and my dad and my kids, my wife and my sister are actually visiting Hampton Court Palace. This is the first time I've ever been there, even though I lived in London for years, but it's the first time I've ever been. And it is said that Catherine's agonized screams can sometimes be heard along the haunted gallery at Hampton Court as she tries desperately to reach the king and plead for forgiveness. Even if Catherine had tried to flee her captors, her original apartments no longer exist, and the route that she would have taken would not have included the gallery where people say they hear the screams. However, there have been more reported ghostly sightings and faintings along this stretch in the Hampton Court Palace. It's actually known as the Haunted Gallery, and I am so looking forward to seeing it. Like I said, it's just somewhere I've never been, and we are there in a couple of weeks to go and have a look. So, yeah, I will give you all an update on that because I think it will be quite interesting. I'll take lots of pictures, put them onto the Facebook group, so anyone who's on there, get yourselves onto the Facebook group, have a look, and I'll put the pictures and videos and stuff like that if we take any on there, so you'll all be able to have a look. Now, I started the podcast by mentioning I'd had an email, and if people don't want to listen, someone's actually asked my opinion on what's going on in America right now. I do know that sometimes this can cause some issues with people listening to the podcast. Some people are just a little bit too sensitive to listen to other people's opinions. So if you are of that nature and you don't want to be offended by anything, please turn off now. I hope you enjoyed the episode and we shall see you next week. However, if you do want to listen to this email and you do want to stay, then I shall read it out to you. So this is from Tanner Smith. So thank you very much for emailing. It says, "Hello, Dan. I am a newish listener and I like to binge history podcasts. I have almost fully caught up with your podcast." Now, this was actually sent a week ago. So if they've managed to do that in the space of a week, I would assume they've probably caught up. But to catch up on nearly 200 episodes, that is a pretty avid listener. So thank you very much for that. I am a fan of the podcast and I like the stories that you tell, including your dad's. Well, I think you're not alone with that one. I think a lot of people do like my dad's episodes as well. So that's why we keep having him back on. And we have got another one of dad's coming up in a couple of weeks. It puts, I like the different viewpoints that you present in your episodes, and it definitely sometimes challenges my own, but I like to be open-minded. The reason I wanted to contact you was to see what your current views are on Donald Trump. The whole Epstein thing and his polarizing policies, do you still hold the same views from the last episode you did on the last seven presidents of America? Is your opinion different now? And I find that very, very interesting, because I did say on that that last presidential one that I do believe Donald Trump was a very, very good president in his first term. I think he will go down in history as a fantastic president. I'm going to revisit that. In regards to the whole Epstein thing, Donald Trump's always said that he was an acquaintance of Jeffrey Epstein up until 2009, when he realized, or when it came out, that Jeffrey Epstein was trafficking women and committing these offenses to underage girls. Donald Trump removed himself from that circle with that particular man, which I believe any person should. Now, whether that was done out of guilt because he was involved, or whether that was done out of the fact that any man in that situation, short of actually killing their friend or killing their acquaintance, the safer thing to do is just to walk away and pretend you never knew them. So I don't know in regards to that whether it's self-preservation or whether he was genuinely disgusted by the man. So I'll leave that one up to you. What I do believe is in 2024, the Democrats ran probably the worst smear campaign I have ever seen in political history. Donald Trump was called everything from a Nazi to a rapist to a philanderer to the next Adolf Hitler, homophobic, transphobic, any name they could pluck out of the dictionary, they threw at Donald Trump and tried to back it up with evidence. They never called him a paedophile. They never called him a nonce. And I believe massively that if there was evidence on Donald Trump being involved with Epstein Island or these trafficking things, the Democrats would have used it at the last election, because if I'm honest with you, that would have swayed the election. Any normal sane person is not going to go out and vote for someone who's linked with paedophiles. So I believe personally that in regards to the whole Epstein thing, he's essentially innocent. Because I think it would have come out well before by the Democrats. They would have smeared him with it. They didn't smear him with it. That's my opinion. Moving on from that, what do I think of him at the moment? I think President Putin has made him look an absolute mug on the world stage, saying he was going to end the war and get everyone to the table. And yeah, it's kind of failed. So obviously that's not completely his fault, but I do think he's not made himself look good in that situation. Everything else that I'm seeing coming out of America, I'm pretty happy with. There are things that Trump is doing in regards to your immigration that I wish our country was doing. There are things that he has done that I wish our country was doing as well, in regards to the tariffs. You know, screw everybody else, we're going to put America first. I wish our country did the same thing and said, screw everyone else, we're putting Great Britain first. And we don't seem to be doing that. So the time will tell whether this 4 years is going to be better or worse than his first 4 years. But I think, you know, having an idiot sandwich either side of a Trump administration, he's going to look good. You know, he's, when he left office in 20, 2020 in the first instance, egg prices were down to, I think it's about 58 cents a dozen, something like that. He's kind of like brought that back down. And I know that's the only thing we kind of know about is the egg prices in America. I think it's down to about $3.50 now. So, you know, he's doing the right things. It might not be going the right way about it, but like I said, time will tell in regards to Donald Trump's second term. But with him having a term either side of such a ridiculously useless president, I think whatever he does, he's going to look good. So anyway, I hope I haven't offended too many people. Like I said, these are just opinions when we're talking about this time, because I don't live in America. I don't have a dog in the fight. It's just my opinion. So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.